we are going to be looking in a moment or two at Psalms. We have looked at earlier chapters. We're starting today with Psalm 31. I do want to do my quarterly encouragement. That is, I encourage everybody to get a name tag and put a name tag on. Because it turns out that in my old age, I'm becoming forgetful. Yesterday, for example, we have a niece, Barbara's niece out in Texas, was going to get married at Barbara's sister's home. Her brother had gone through the training to become a minister, able to officiate, and our family gathered at our house to watch the wedding on FaceTime. I was hard at work at the university, and my phone rang. It was somebody from Texas calling me on FaceTime. I answered the phone. I watched the wedding. Turns out, you can't see FaceTime on the iPad that's at home if I have answered the phone. I had a glorious time. I posted a picture that I took from the screen. And my family was fine with assigning it to a technical glitch until I posted on FaceTime.
Whoops.
I got a message from my daughter basically saying, you better get your own food. I don't think there's supper for you. Barbara's gracious statement was, if I thought for a minute you had done that on purpose. But you just forgot. Now I'm telling you, I'm forgetting critical things. And your name is going to be one of them. And if you will wear your name tags, I have a chance of pretending that I remember. And that would be a gift you could give me. For those of you who are keeping score, on Friday of this week is the last of the last lectures I will give. I've now given three. I've given two. I've got one to go. There are a small number of additional celebrations that are going to take place. And Mother's Day is graduation. On the Monday afterwards, there's a faculty meeting that ends in a working lunch as we spend the time during that lunch planning for the future. My intention is to attend that lunch and then walk away. I intend to ask for permission to make the motion to adjourn the faculty meeting at the end of that meeting. I think I have earned the right to perhaps do that. So that's all to say that the next couple of weeks is pretty crowded with things. My lab is mostly empty. My office is mostly full. If you see where the problem is, then you're right on top of it.
Bill,
yes, sir.
I think that you'll find for the memory card loads of empathy, but no sympathy.
Thank you for that.
Whatever your name is.
What was your name? I told you a couple of weeks ago about what I saw posted on Facebook, which said, my short-term memory is horrible, and so is my short-term memory. That's really good. Speaking of Facebook, I'm certainly on FaceTime too much. Yesterday, my brother posted a small little pithy paragraph on Facebook. And this morning, Tom Stocks preached the message of that little paragraph. The church should be seen as a hospital, as a rehab clinic, as a place of refuge. The church is not a country club, and we should stop treating it like one. That person who's smoking outside the church doors, the woman in inappropriate clothing, the man who may have whiskey on his breath. These are children of God. They are not excuses to pass judgment. Ask them their story. Buy them coffee. Really listen to them. That is the gospel. Not telling them they need to get their act together before they can attend the church. Buy them coffee. Really listen to them. Did you catch that moment, those of you who've been in the worship service, did you catch that moment when Dr. Stocks made a point of saying, they looked at the man and said, look at us. Look at us. Everybody's distracted. It was, I think, 15 years ago, a complaint was raised. There's cigarette butts on the ground outside the entrance that's straight down that hallway. North Star at that time was using our church facilities, I wish they still were, for AA meetings. And when the AA meetings broke up, the people lingered around that door because the rooms they were using were up here. And they talked to one another. And given everything those folks were going through, smoking was a crutch that they could use to get them through the next day. Every time I saw the cigarette butts, I said, praise you, Lord. But every time some other people saw the cigarette butts, they said, how terrible is that? I heard that complaint again 2 months ago. I remember the day that I heard a story. And it had just happened. It was true. A woman had been brought by her friends to North Star. At the time, they were meeting at Bon Air Elementary School, just down the road here. She was hung over from a night that she wished she could have forgotten. And what Teresa and the others at North Star did had given her hope. 1 week later, she came back with a car full of friends, all hung over. And she could not remember where North Star met. She just knew it was off of Buford Road. So she stopped at a church on Buford Road. They got out of the car, and a man in a suit came over and said, what do you think you're doing? You can't go into this church dressed like that. And they got back into the car and drove away. I don't know if they made another stop. I know they made that stop. Their second stop was at Bon Air, at one of the side doors over here. And there was a man standing there in a suit. And they rolled down the window and they said, can you tell us where North Star is? And the man started to tell them and then said, no, listen, let me go get my car. You wait right here. I'm going to come back. I'm going to make sure you get to the right place. I do not know if I've ever been more proud of my church. But there were other people who could have been at that door. The message this morning is powerful. There's a deeper message there. Notice. Pay attention. See the possibility in everybody around you. And when the opportunity presents itself and you hear a little nudge from the Spirit that says, talk to that one. Maybe you need to talk to that one. And maybe that one needs to talk to you. We are looking at Psalms. We are looking at Psalms 31. In my forgetfulness, it is quite possible we will do a psalm twice someday. But I think this is where we need to be. I'm trying to take note of this. Lord, I have come to you for... Mine says protection. I'm looking at the first verse, the first few words, Psalm 31. I'm looking to see what your translation says. I have come to you for protection. Whatever yours says there, what does it say in the middle of verse 2? Be my rock of...
strength.
Mine has protection. If yours has refuge in the first case, there's a good chance it's got refuge in the second case. Verse 4. middle of the verse. Pull me away from the trap my enemies have set for me, for I find protection in you alone. Should be the same word if there's some consistency in your translation. What's he asking the Lord to do? And that's different from save. Although at the end of verse 1, mine also says, save me. And here's what I see. Verse 1, Lord, I have come to you for protection. 1, don't let me be disgraced. 2, save me, for you do what is right. 3, turn your ear to listen to me. 4, rescue me quickly. 5, be my rock of protection, and the circle closes. Second half of verse 2, be my rock of protection, a fortress where I will be safe. How does yours render that? Does it use the same words? Some of you said you use refuge instead of protection. Does yours say fortress for that other word?
Yes. Stronghold.
Okay.
Stronghold.
Stronghold. Okay. Okay. Verse 2, be my rock of protection, a fortress where I will be safe. How does verse 3 start? You are my rock and my fortress. For the honor of your name, lead me out of this danger. What danger was David in when he wrote this song? We don't know. Because I think if you look at the top at verse 0, this is one that doesn't tell you. Does yours tell you something different in verse 0? I don't think we know on this one. There is one coming where that's what's happening. There's an unspecified predicament that he's in, an unspecified quandary that he's in, an unspecified situation that he's in, and whatever it is, there is danger in it. Knowing David, the danger probably has a sword as the point of it.
My note has an interesting thing for verse 0. A prayer for deliverance when confronted by a conspiracy so powerful and open that all David's friends abandoned him.
I think that's reading into what's here, and I think that's probably pretty accurate. Verse 4. What does it say as the first two words?
Free
yours says. Mine says pull me.
Yeah.
Pull me from the trap my enemy set for me.
Draw me out.
Draw me out. Thank you. Draw me out. Do you have a mind that leaps from idea and to idea? Do you have a mind like that? I'm cursed with that. I find myself thinking about something and, oh, squirrel.
Yes.
This one is a little bit more serious, and I want you to listen to it. Mine says, pull me from the trap. In the sermon today, Dr. Stocks used the word pit at one point. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. Maybe it was in what Norman read at some point. I forget which the context was. Okay. What's the picture? You're down in a hole in the ground. And you need help to get out. The Gospel of West Wing is fascinating. And there's two or three things that should catch your eye if you have binge-watched that series. There was a guy who was in trouble emotionally. And they brought in a psychologist to work with him. And there's this wonderful moment where the psychologist is finally pinned down where the problem is. And the guy looks at the psychologist and says, I don't think you're allowed to have that problem and work at the White House. Great sentence. That is a great, great sentence. I don't think you're allowed to work at the White House and have that problem. This guy's working at the White House. He has that problem. So what has he done? He's hidden it like crazy. and everything is building up around him, or he's feeling like he's in the hole in the ground. And here he is. And he finally opens up and says one sentence that makes it very clear, I have acknowledged to another human being the problem I face. And the psychologist closes his books, puts his stuff into a bag, and heads for the door. And the guy says, where are you going? He says, there's lots of people can help you now. You needed to get to the point where you could say that. But I just opened up to you. There's lots of people who can help you. You needed to get to that point. That's what I was here for. And so the guy's sitting there, feeling funny. He walks out of the room, and in the lobby of the area, he sees his boss, chief of staff of the White House. It's 3 a.m. in the morning, and he's there. And he says to him, what are you doing here? And he says, let me tell you a story. Guy was walking home one night. The power had gone out. There wasn't any light. And the street people had been digging a hole for some kind of sewer repair. And the guy fell into a hole. And he's down in the hole, hurt, doesn't have the strength to get out. And a doctor comes by. And he says, Doc, I'm down here in the hole. I need some help. And the doctor writes out a prescription, throws it in the hole, and says, here, take some of this, it'll help you. And he walks on. Sees another guy coming by, he recognizes him. He's a preacher. Preacher, I'm in trouble, you got to help me. Preacher takes a piece of paper, writes out a prayer, throws it in the hole, says, here, pray this, it'll be better. Then he sees a friend coming by, just enough light to see the friend. Joe, he says, I'm in trouble. I'm down here in this hole. Can you help me? Joe jumps in the hole. What'd you do that for? Now there's two of us in the hole. And Joe says, yeah, but I've been in this hole, and I know the way out. Chief of staff of the White House, telling that to this guy, saying essentially, yeah, I've known all along. That's why this guy was here to talk to you. I've been in that same hole too. Let's work together. There's not very often that Hollywood gets it right. But that day, in that episode, they got it right. The psalmist is praying from a place like that. Verse 5, I entrust my spirit into your hand. I almost wonder if Jesus had read that about 20 times before he was on the cross, because that sounds really close to one of the seven last words of Jesus.
Mine sounds even closer. Into your hands I commit my spirit.
Rescue me, Lord, for you are a faithful God. Verse 6, I hate those who worship worthless idols. That one doesn't ring true. Something's wrong with my translation, I think. I trust in the Lord. I will be glad and rejoice in your unfailing love. Anybody else hear the clue? For you have seen my troubles, and you care about the anguish of my soul. You have not handed me over to my enemies. You have set me in a safe place. Now, starting at verse 9, I have an assignment for you. You need to do this very, very quickly. What is the predominant pronoun in verse 9, 10, 11, and 12?
Me, I,
me, my, he. I am is repeated over and over again. My eyes, my ears, my enemies, my neighbors, my friends. Where is the psalmist's attention? On himself. Why? Because that's what happens when you get scared. All of a sudden, all you can see is the predicament you're in, and you in that predicament. Starting at verse 14 and 15 and 16 and 17, can you see a different pronoun emerge? What has the psalmist done? Turned his attention to God. Why? Out of desperation. God is my only hope. Verse 19. How many times does the word you appear? By my count, it's four.
Four yous and one your.
How great is the goodness you have stored up for those who fear you. You lavish it on those who come to you for protection. There's protection again. Blessing them before the watching world. You hide them in the shelter of your presence, safe from those who conspire against them. You shelter them in your presence, far from accusing tongues. What word am I going to notice in here? You've been here for a while, some of you. What word am I going to notice in there? It may not be the same word that's in your translation, but there's a word that I notice. Uh-oh. How great is the goodness you have stored up for those who fear you. You lavish it on those who come to you for protection. Have we been so long that you've forgotten
lavish.
That word?
It's in Ephesians.
It's in Charlottesville, Virginia.
No.
I spent 26 summers living in the squalid Arms Hotel at the University of Virginia. It had five sleeping rooms, each with a bath. When I first came there, I carried in a refrigerator and a microwave. I carried in an air conditioner. I carried in other things. I carried in a rug. I carried in other things. By the time I left, it had an air conditioner. It had a rug. It had a microwave and a refrigerator. They finally seen that maybe this is something we should provide for them. The squalid Arms got slightly better over the years.
Less squalid.
But there was one summer when the squalid Arms was not available. And I said, what am I going to do? I need a place to stay for the summer. And I don't have one. Now, I don't know what you would have done, but I know what I did. I went to two Baptist churches. And I said, is there anybody in the church that has a room that they rent? I believe I'm reliable. I can give you some references. Don't believe everything you hear, but you can believe the ones I give you. And a person said, I'm in the material science department. I'm taking my family to South Africa for the summer. You can use my house. You remember this story, son?
Yes. Yes.
You remember the story? See, the rest of them don't know what's coming. I move into the house. Right? The house has an addition that's just been built on the house. Inside the addition, there are 1, 2, 3, 4 levels in this room. And the front of the room is a giant screen that covers the entire room. On each level, there are 2 leather sofas of exquisite softness. There is a gigantic projector in the back of the room, and one wall opens up to DVDs. And I came back. And the next week, there was a Sunday school lesson, and in the Sunday school lesson was, he has lavished on us everything we need for the life we are to live. And I said, I've just been lavished. Oh, I had a complete kitchen. I had lots of stuff. Place to park my car that was under shelter. What's the predominant pronoun in verse 19 and 20?
You.
You. What's the predominant pronoun in verse 21?
He.
What has the psalmist just done? No, he has not switched back and forth. It started off, I am, me. He switched to you, speaking to God. What's he done now? Verse 21.
He switched to third person.
What's he done?
He's giving his testimony.
He just switched to where he is not only trapped not trapped in the pit anymore. He's come to the point where he can now tell a watching world something of his relationship with God. But in verse 22, he can't keep it up. He has shown me the wonders of his unfailing love. He has kept me safe when my city was under attack. In panic, I cried out, I'm cut off from the Lord, but you heard my cry of mercy. If he had continued his testimony, it would have been he. Verse 23, he gets back to his testimony. Love the Lord, any of you who are God's. G-O-D, apostrophe S. For the Lord protects, there's that word again, those who are loyal to him, but he harshly punishes the arrogant. So be strong and courageous, all you who put your hope in the Lord. Psalm 32. We may only do two today. Oh, what joy for those whose disobedience is forgiven and whose sin is put out of sight. I need to know how yours words that, because the more ways we see to word this, the more you can start to pick up the nuance.
Transgressions are forgiven.
And whose sin is covered.
Sin is covered. I like whose sin is put out of sight. But covered, I think, is more accurate. Yes, what joy for those whose record the Lord has cleared of guilt. That's one of the most clear statements of what happens when we come to a saving relationship with God. Yes, what joy for those whose record the Lord has cleared of guilt, whose lives are lived in complete honesty. Verse 3, he looks back, the psalmist does. When I refused to confess my sin, what happened?
My body wasted away.
I groaned all day long. Day and night, your hand of discipline was heavy on me. My strength evaporated like water in the summer heat. Selah. Ooh. Forgot about that, huh? What does Selah mean? Pause. Think about that. Don't go on until you've had a chance to think about that. Do you see the word? In my translation, it says interlude, but I know what it says in other translations. It's in italics. That means it's not part of the verse. Does yours have that? Day and night, your hand of discipline was heavy on me. My strength evaporated like water in the summer heat. Finally, I confessed all my sins to you. I confessed my sins? No, I confessed all my sins to you. Remember what the AA program requires? There's a point down there where it says, find one trusting human being and lay it all out. Every single thing. I finally, I confessed all my sins to you, and I stopped trying to hide my guilt. I said to myself, I will confess my rebellion to the Lord. And I have an exclamation point after the next four words. And you forgave me. All my guilt is gone. It is done. Price has been paid. It is done. Did you hear it? That's what we say. It is done. Victory is won. It is done. I said to myself, I will confess my rebellion to the Lord, and you forgave me. Exclamation point. All my guilt is gone. I need to tell you a little story behind the scenes. You weren't there this morning. We missed you.
I'll be there.
Yeah, I know. But Jim Ayler did what he sometimes does, and I need you to know he does it. He looked at us after we practiced that little section. Forgiven. It is done. And he looked at us and says, you didn't convince me.
If you're going to sing that, you need to sing it as it stands. You have been forgiven, and that's the biggest thing that's ever happened in your life. And if you can't sing it like that, you're not singing it right. He wasn't talking about music. He wasn't talking about intervals. He wasn't talking about timing. He was talking about, are you expressing that? Not to you guys who might have been listening, but to God. Therefore, let the godly pray to you while there is still time, that they may not drown in the flood waters of judgment. I don't know that there's a better pair of verses that we're going to see in the next 4 months. I said to myself, I will confess my rebellion to the Lord, and you forgave me. All my guilt is gone. Therefore, let all the godly pray to you while there is still time, that they may not drown in the flood waters of judgment. For you are my hiding place. You protect me from trouble. You surround me with songs of victory. Selah. Pause. Think about that. The Lord says, I will guide you along the best pathway for your life. I will advise you and watch over you. Don't be like a senseless horse, much less a senseless mule. You guys remember Jehoshaphat? I hope you do. That needs a bit and a bridle to keep it under control. Many sorrows come to the wicked, but unfailing love surrounds those who trust in the Lord. So rejoice in the Lord and be glad, all you who obey Him. Shout for joy, all you whose hearts are pure. Is my heart pure? Is my heart pure? Is your heart pure? God says, I am going to cleanse you. Have you seen the words in this song? I said to myself, I will confess all my rebellion to the Lord. And I can't believe it. You forgave me. All of my guilt is gone. If I believe it, then I'm ready to work in the fields of the kingdom. And that's the call. Let's stop there. Let's have a word of prayer. Our Father, we thank you for the time you've given us this morning. I thank you especially for Psalm 32. There's something about that song that just reaches points that are so clear and so vital. And I thank you that your servant David so long ago penned those words, and that translators with skill and with love of you brought those words into a language that I could understand. I pray that you would teach me, teach my brothers and sisters here how to live a forgiven life. Because it seems like sometimes that's hard to do. All this we pray in your Son's name.